Do you have repair projects that you've been putting off, whether it's basement waterproofing, concrete raising, structural repairs, or attic insulation? PermaSeal provides quality work and free inspections. Don't wait. Call PermaSeal 800-421-7325 or permaseal.net.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to get into the worlds of theater, the arts, and today, comedy, comedy authorship, comedy performance. I love this guest, and I love him as a person, and he's been with me before on Behind the Curtain, but joining me for this show here on WGN Plus as well is actor, author, comedian Jeff Hiller. You know him from, among other things, Somebody Somewhere, which just was one of HBO's greatest creations. It's where I fell in love with you, Jeff, to be honest with you. And then I learned about the rest of your career. But congratulations, because you have a new book just came out, which is called Actress of a Certain Age, with a subtitle, My 20-Year Trail to Overnight Success. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. You were just in Chicago playing to sold out crowds as always here. So I'm glad you were here and I know you will be back. When we were last together and talked and you were on the morning show with Bridget, this book was in the works. So just before we just get into it, tell me a little bit about what led you to say, I'm going to take this kind of autobiography, which you talk a lot about in your comedy shows, because I've seen you, and I'm going to put it in book form.
Well, they let me.
You need that. You got to have that.
It was a real incentive. I've always wanted to be a writer, but this was the first time that my platform was at a place where, more frankly, they would let me. And so this is sort of a cobbled together of a lot of my stand-up shows, my solo shows, and it's also just sort of an ode to the celebrity memoir. In this particular instance, with a really loose definition of the word celebrity.
Well, yeah, we won't mention names to know who you're referring to. You know, I have to say this, though. At the end of the book, you make the comment, which is, hey, if you see me on the street, please come up and tell me stories about you. So I thought what we would do is spend our half hour together talking about me.
Well, I owe you because you read my book, so it's fair.
And that was proof that I read it, right? That last comment.
Yes, that was from the last chapter. So impressive. Unless you just flipped to the back. I don't know.
It would have been smart, but no, I didn't do that. I actually read. No, you know why? Because I loved it. Now, there is something over here. I'm going to show my stupidity, but I'm going to help viewers who are watching this, like, avoid the same, unless you want us to have this moment. Every chapter of the book looks like it is written by a celebrity. And I know you said celebrity memoirs kind of get you going. But for me, when I first got the book, you can open up to any page, but here's one called Little Girl Lost by Drew Barrymore. Mm-hmm. And so I initially thought, oh, wow, what this really is a series of chapters written by all these celebrity friends of yours.
About myself.
About yourself. They all knew your life. But I do have a theory about what it is. So can I ask you?
You can.
You wrote it. It really is not written by Drew Barrymore and stuff. But I have this theory that every one of those chapters was written by somebody who hit stardom quicker than you did, earlier than you. Am I reading it right?
Yes. I named each chapter after a celebrity memoir. And then at the bottom of the page, I give a footnote that says exactly when they hit their big break.
And for Drew Barrymore, it was very young.
She was six.
Yeah. That always helps.
Just 40 short years before me.
Well, and your whole book is about, well, look, the title, My 20 Years to Overnight Success, which is, there's so many actors who say that because something hits, like Somebody Somewhere, and all of a sudden we're like, oh my God, you're huge. And you're going, hello, I've been doing this for 20 years. And you've done many, many things, and they're in the book. We'll talk about them. But essentially you're like, you just know me now. My question is, when you look at all those people with those memoirs who hit it at a younger age than you, what did they have that you didn't? I don't mean that as a mean question. I just, what did they have that made them hit at age? Well, I guess they sometimes have famous parents.
Well, yeah, that does help. Yeah, Drew Barrymore is sort of a not a very good example because
Yeah, bad example.
she
I just
really didn't
put
even
that.
have any autonomy in that. I think, this business is about luck and chemistry and timing, and this is my timing and this is my luck, and that's kind of what the whole book is about. It's about how a lot of times when we're kids, we think that our definition of success is, I'm going to get to hold a gold statue and I'm going to be lauded and have all sorts of money. And then I hit 40 years old and all I had was credit card debt. So I realized that my life hadn't turned out in the way that I had hoped. But that didn't mean that I could give up on hope or that I should give up on hope. And so, that's what this book is about. It's about a love letter to the people who don't have those incredible careers. It's a love letter to the people who don't have whatever Jennifer Lawrence has, and keep going and keep trying because they have a dream and they're not willing to give up on themselves.
But some of them also, not that they're chapters in the book, but there are people who have their moment of fame, their 15 minutes, and sometimes fade from the scene, and that's not you. There are a couple of things in the
Well,
book
not
that
yet.
are, and I know the book is funny. The book is very funny, and you're very funny. There are a couple of things that kind of struck me, and so I'm going to turn serious on you a little bit here and there, if that's okay. And maybe this
Sure.
wasn't meant to be serious, but you talk about having a middle-aged crisis at age 40, and let's be honest, you're hitting 50 now, so that's behind you. But in the middle-aged crisis, hey, look, I'm over 60, so. But you make the point, you
Was,
say,
that's a great roast. I
you're
love
right.
it.
I'm saying this with love, I love you.
I know.
But you make the point that say, here's the thing about 40, that when you turn 80 and you pick up the paper and realize so-and-so died at 80, that nobody cries, nobody cares. And it made me just think, wow, it's, there's that 40, the double it to 80, that's the point you make in the book. And then there's the people at 60. And yeah, it does get scary the longer we go because the less of a surprise it is when you leave the stage.
Right. And Pema Chodron says that the fear of aging is really a fear of mortality. And I think that that's probably true. And I think for me, it's also about just wishing I had accomplished more in those 40 years. And so it was serious. It wasn't, I mean, I joke about it in the book, but it was real. It was really like, oh my gosh, I don't have a way to make a living completely. And I don't have kids. I don't have money. I don't have accolades. I'm just this 40-year-old homosexual walking around New York City hoping I could pay the rent this month.
But you also set goals for yourself. You wrote in the book you wanted to meet somebody. Maybe it was boyfriend, but it became husband. But meeting your husband Neil by age 31, there are moments in your book where you set a goal for yourself and you met it.
Well, I didn't hit that one until 32, but yes,
Oh, I'm sorry.
I did. I set that goal. And a few months late, I achieved it. But also, what I
With
the
other people
reason
along the way, I might add, that we read about.
I, but the reason I put that in there is because so many times we set these arbitrary goals for ourselves. We say like, if I haven't made it by the time I'm 40, or if I don't have a lover by the time I'm 30, I'm a loser or I'm bad. And that's just a stupid voice in your head. It's not truth. It's not real.
At one point, you refer to yourself and you say, yes, I'm gay, but I'm not hot. And again, I know it's supposed to be funny in the book, but sometimes I took things because there's nobody who plays serious roles better than a comedian, in my view, right? Jerry Lewis, you can name them. They're amazing when they're serious. So once in a while, I took a line out of there that reads funny, but I went, something behind that. First of all, you're hot. And secondly, I
Oh.
feel like you've been, well, we're public, so we can talk about that, but I feel like you've been hard on yourself throughout. Are you hard on yourself?
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course. Yes. I mean, aren't we all? Aren't we all? Aren't we the meanest to I'm so much meaner to myself than I would ever be to anyone else. That's just life. That's why we have therapists,
Thank goodness. The coming out story, you sort of say you realized that you were, so you came out to your, the way you worded it is you came out to yourself when you were 12. But when I look at your background, I mean, you went to church every Sunday. You were in like religious camps. They make movies about those. You went to these religious, I've seen.
It wasn't that kind of camp, but
Okay.
yes. It was just a Christian camp, yeah.
I don't know what goes on there. I'm Jewish. I never went. And we have camps too, but mostly it was about making macrame things. But I mean, so you did the camps. You went to a commune party after college. One could argue you could have ended up a priest or in the ministry or something like that. Was that part of the, just because of your upbringing?
Yeah, I majored in theology because I thought I was going to be a pastor, and I feel like if I hadn't come out, I might be a pastor now, and I think I would probably be happy being a pastor. I really enjoyed the community that a church provides, and I fortunately went to churches that were left of center, that were really focused on helping people and serving people and leading with love rather than judgment. So yeah, that was a huge part of things. But the gay thing really threw a gum and a wrench in there. And I'm grateful for that because I do feel like I would have been a fine pastor, but I wouldn't have been a great pastor. But I do think I'm a pretty good actor, and I think I'm better at acting than I would have been at pastoring. So it's probably for the best for not just me, but the world as a whole.
And for a young person who wants to come out to their parents, would you recommend they wait till their mom is watching Cheers in the living room and then break it to them?
Yes. A rerun of Cheers in syndication. I don't
That
know
is
if
a good
you
point. Because the truth is, you knew she had probably seen it already. You weren't really interrupting anything.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm still kind,
Right.
even when I am breaking their hearts, which they did not feel that way, I should say.
But your mom knew.
Yeah, she was already on top of it, and she had actually done a lot of research on the matter because that is her way. And she was very supportive. And my dad, while quiet, eventually was supportive as well.
But you also went through bullying. I don't know if it's his real name, but you called him Josh. Josh of gym class. We all had the gym class bullies
Yeah.
who would do things and stuff. When you look back on that now, were those growth experiences? And do you have a message for young people who are in that same situation? Because you kind of you put up with a fair amount of it and you tolerated it well.
Yeah, I don't have really a message for the young people, but I do have a message for teachers and adults who are around those young people, which is that it's not just something that's should be laughed off or that is a part of all childhoods. I think it is something that needs to be intervened and watched out for. And a lot of times, the only most of my teachers either turned a blind eye or at most would say, like, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't act so girly. They would give me things like that, which I think is what children call victim blaming. And we're not okay with
It's why you
that.
spent so much time in Namibia, instead of Ireland. I read the book.
Really did.
Okay. But one day, Jeff, you decide when it's time to move the career along, you're going to move to LA and join the pilot process, not the airplane pilot, but you're going to get a series because that's what we do. How did that
Right.
go?
Well, it didn't go well. I never booked a TV show. I did book what's called a pilot presentation, which is like a pilot without any of the money or prestige. And while I was there, it was in a sitcom for Logo, the LGBT network, and it was written by two straight dudes, and they changed the lead female character to a gay man, and I got it, and I got $300 for the
Wow. Now, was that the show where there was an instruction you were going to have to kiss a boy?
Yes, they were very, very worried that the actors would show up and say that they wouldn't participate in kissing in a same-sex kiss, and they warned me three times that I would have to do it, and I would be in breach of contract if I didn't. And I was like, "I'll do it. I've been practicing with my boyfriend."
Yes, that line is in there. I love it. Did they know you were gay, or were they fearful you weren't and were just kind of playing gay and they had to make you do that? I don't know.
Can't imagine they were really afraid that I wasn't gay. I think that maybe some other actors that they had approached had said that they wouldn't do it, and so they, when they got to the bottom of the barrel, me, they just wanted to make sure if they were stooping that I would smooch
But you
it.
did write, if I have this right, you did, your scene partner was straight, and didn't you room or you shared a space together and you had to talk about this, and I
Yeah.
guess you had to let him know you'll be fine.
Yeah, he was scared, very, very scared, and possibly traumatized after. And he smelled like cigarettes and stress.
Well, there's so many parts. Look, you and I keep talking about somebody somewhere, but I mean, my goodness, your American Horror Story and your role in that was stunning, scary, phenomenal, best season ever of American Horror Story. You were so good in that. But
Thank
look,
you.
you've been 30 Rock, all these other shows, a lot of smaller parts here and there. You say that on Broadway, you almost killed somebody in the audience when you're on Broadway and Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. We gave that story and many others on our previous interview, so I'm going to send people back to that one if you want to find out how he almost killed an audience member. Spoiler alert: the member did not die.
What a spoiler.
Right, but I do want to talk about Somebody Somewhere because even there, you're so tailor-made for the role of Joel. But even that came to you. It was you didn't really know Bridget all that well. People probably thought you were best friends, and you get a text one day, or an
Yeah,
email,
well,
I think.
email. Yeah, we didn't even have each other's cell phone number. Yeah, she knew she had this part for a gay guy in his 40s, and so she was reaching out to all of the gay actors in their 40s that she knew, and I was one of
Many.
but it was so perfect for me, and when I read it, I thought, oh my gosh, somehow she knows my story, and she wrote this role for me. And then the creators of the show were like, no. No, it was not for you. But I do think there was something cosmic going on because he really is so similar to me, and it is such a gift to me. So
But
it
that was my
felt
next
very.
question. You, when I watched Joel, I mean, I don't know you that well, but when I'm watching you play Joel for 3 seasons, I'm feeling like this is not a far cry from who Jeff is.
Yeah, I mean,
This isn't what you want.
he's a much a better person than I am. But yeah, I think it's just so rare to see a gay character written with such nuance, and to see someone like a lot of time, because most of the roles, I guess just from my experience, usually if there's a gay character, he's sort of bitchy and snide and has like fun, witty retorts, and you rarely ever see someone nice. And he's nice, and I think in that sense we are similar in that I am visibly gay, but also nice.
And the religious part of Joel and the desire for the relationship part of Joel and all of that certainly, yeah, certainly fits in. When last we talked, Mike Haggerty, who played Ed, Bridget's, or yeah, the character's father, had just passed away. And so I asked you, what are they going to do? What are you, and you were filming, you were in town because you were doing season three, and you did not know. You said they have not told us. Well, now we know. They never dealt with it really. So talk about that, the loss of Mike, and there's a lot of you spent a lot of time in the book talking about Mike, clearly was very beloved, and it looked like it was really tough for the cast and the writers to simply write him out.
Yeah, I think that would probably be the first choice for most writers, and I think it would make sense, and definitely life happens that way. Bridget even said like she lost her sister and then her dad within a year. And I think maybe like dramaturgically they had spent season one focusing on Sam's grief, and maybe they didn't want to do that again. But I think the real reason is just it was so shocking and so sad, and I think they just didn't want to have to lose him in two different places. And somehow, even though we lost him in the real world, we could keep him in the make-believe world.
Had they brought in a second Darren to take that role, would that have, you know what I mean?
I do.
Would that have, I mean, poor Dick Sargent, and he was a friend of mine, but poor Dick Sargent
Really?
never got a break.
Dick
Yeah.
Sargent was your friend? Holy
Oh,
crap.
yes, I have to tell you, I'll tell you stories. But you know, I'm not sure he was ever accepted as Darren the way Dick York was, or so we're not talking about Bewitched. We can do that over a drink.
Right.
But could they have done that? Could they
And
have
I could,
brought
by the way, I could.
a
I have a lot to say about Bewitched.
Oh, I love it.
I don't think that that would make, Bewitched it's like, I don't think they did actually, but they could have said, like, Endora put a spell on him so he looks a little different, Whereas, in our world, it is all about realness and that is sort of the main part of the show is how authentic it is to life. And so yeah, I think it would have been strange. And I also think There was something so beautiful about how Mike had spent his career playing all of these sort of broad, funny characters, and he finally, at the end of his career, had this show where he was able to show the breadth of his talent. And I think it would have been a little, I don't know, insulting to his memory to bring in another actor to take over that role.
They could have done what they did in the Munsters, bring in somebody who looked like Marilyn.
Who looks like Mike Haggerty? He's a legend.
exactly. Yeah, it's true. Clearly, you made it clear in the book the cast was not happy that the show did not get a fourth season. I think your fans are disappointed as well. So, had there been a fourth season challenge, what Sam and Joel, what are we doing? What's in the fourth season? What are the plots? What's happening to your characters?
Well, I wasn't a writer, so this is all just,
But you are Joel.
yes, that's right. The thing about that show is it kind of can go on forever because these are just people living their lives. There's not a high premise or a hook or anything. And so I think we would just continue to see their friendship, growing and seeing them have, issues that we all have in life. And I think Joel would still be with Brad, his boyfriend. And I think he would still be very close with Sam. He says at the end of season three that she is his person, and she is. So I think they would be continuing to live their beautiful life together.
Well, it was an amazing show, and just the way you—I know that Bridget lost her dog Poppy during the course of the show, and then there's all the scenes where she's going to adopt a dog, and it's almost as though the writers are looking at life and saying, "Let's bring this in."
Absolutely.
So so tough, and for dog lovers, that's—and I know you are too—that's just really tough. So you write the book. Is it cathartic? It's over. It's out there now. People are like near talking to you about it. Is that cathartic, or you're like, just read the book and stop talking to me about it?
Certain chapters provide a catharsis, but if I'm being completely honest, I wrote that book, and then I've been talking about that book, and I do feel like, oh God, who cares what you have to say? I shouldn't be saying that as I'm trying to sell this
I
book.
care. I care.
Okay, good. But I'm so happy it's out in the world. I really want people to read it. I hope people enjoy it and find it funny and interesting. But yeah, I'm also fine, talking about Bewitched.
Well, there could be another book in you. I mean, a lot of the stories that you talk about, one of the things we can't talk about here, there's three stories in your live show that involves a part of the anatomy, whatever. So we'll skip that here, but they show up in the book. So we're getting some of the material, but the bottom line is that this really is your life. And I'm curious, family members, how did that go over? I know your parents aren't here, but did family members look and learn something about you?
Well, my sister specifically didn't want to read the book until it came out, and I was like, okay, but I don't she's not going to mind. She's really good that way. And any people that I spoke about in ways that I felt like they might have an issue with it, I sent it to them and said, I'm happy to change your name, and also if I remembered it differently than you remember it, which, by the way, sometimes they were like, you remember it differently than I remember it, and so I made those changes.
And I noticed in the acknowledgments you changed my name to something else too. So I appreciate that. The book is Actress of a Certain Age by Jeff Hiller. Congratulations. The book is amazing. Pick it up at bookstores or on Amazon.com. And Jeff, I can't wait to see your next adventure because I'm one of your biggest fans. Thank you for
No, thank you, Paul.
And thanks for joining us here on Paul Lissick Behind the Curtain. We'll see you next week.